It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blasting the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. It's Richard Hobbs here. We're bringing you once again our thoughts on, another Wolves defeat. Today I'm joined by Stu and Andy. Guys, I don't know about you, but I feel like after the culmination for the build-up of the whole transfer deadline day, we all bought into it. It was a bit of a come down, right? It was a bit of a very much a crashing back down to earth, if we're being realistic.
Yeah, in only a way that Wolves can do it, they really reminded us why things have been a bit miserable lately.
See, after our deadline day streaming and the Kelpie cement drink that was taken that night, I was kind of regretting not going to Selhurst, and I was on an iron because I had access to a couple of tickets. So I thought, shall I do it? And then watching that game and that performance, and then hearing the tales of woe of people trying to get home again. No, I'm glad I stayed at home. I've done it too many times. Yeah. I'm not doing it anymore, especially not on Sundays.
Hurt one too many times, Stu.
Well, I tried to work it out the other day.
Let's start from the beginning, guys.
I think I've been there 8 times altogether, 8 or 9 times. Wow. And what was it, 3 wins in that time? Right back in a hat trick, 3 defeats in a row. Just no. Awful shit all. But yeah, carry on.
Yeah. I mean, not to sound bitter, but we are. Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, it almost felt like a bit Groundhog Day. You know, we struggled at the back, tried to implement a new system, and then looked a bit toothless going forward at times as well. So, yeah, this might be a bit of a repeat podcast, guys, who just wind back to any time in the last sort of 18 months. But we'll find something fresh. We'll find something interesting to talk about. We always do. But let's go for starting lineup, because I was really curious to see what Gary O'Neill would do, considering how well everyone played midweek, the new signings, if any of them could actually, you know, feature, and the fact that, you know, Enzo was on the bench, you know, indicated that there might have been that opportunity for some of those players to come in. But it was quite a predictable lineup when push came to shove at the end, wasn't it, Andy?
It was. And to be honest, as soon as I saw that lineup, I'd sort of lost any faith that had been given to me from the transfer deadline day. It was exactly the same team that we've picked in the other 3 games this season. So I thought, well, if you're going to keep going with the same team, there's not really going to be that big change that is sort of needed in the lineup to really spark us into life. So, yeah, it was what it was. But I think we would have been rushing the new signings to get them in. I think, obviously, they only signed on Thursday and Friday, and then trying to get them in the team might have been a little bit too quick. But it wasn't the most inspiring lineup, realistically speaking.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like a heart versus head situation in terms of playing those new players. Because, you know, it is quite literally like your shiny new toy. You get it Christmas and just wanted to play it straight away. And I think a lot of the transfer deadline day, because it happened so late, you know, Matt Hobbs strikes me as someone who hides presents. like behind the tree, under the sofa, and go, here you go. Here you go. You thought we didn't get you anything, but we did. And then he's turned out he's forgotten to get the batteries. He doesn't have the scissors to cut away the stupid fucking plastic. And we've kind of ended up here once again. But we've got a couple of weeks anyway. I feel bad because it feels like I'm procrastinating and don't want to talk about the game. But it wasn't... I don't think it was as bad as some people made out. I don't think it was this hellscape of a game, like the collapse against Brighton and parts against Everton. It wasn't that bad, was it, Stu? I feel like I'm still got a bit of optimism left in my bones. But it wasn't absolutely dire stuff, particularly first half, right?
No, I was... I mean, after all the stuff that we slagged off, I mean, me personally slagged off Fabio for not being able to play up front on his own. I think that was kind of proved again yesterday. But again, we were told by Guinea's Rogue interview that Sasha wouldn't be up to speed straight away anyway. So this is always going to be the case that we've got literally no choice but to play Fabio Silva up there. But with Cunha off, it didn't work at Everton. But if you take the forward line out of things, I thought the rest of the team in the first half was pretty good. And we get the ball moving well. It's other than Jesse Sarr having his little moment, as he will. But other than that, you could hear through the telly that their fans were getting frustrated with them because we were keeping the ball, which when you're away from home, that's kind of all you would want to do, really. And considering how quick we are going forward anyway and scoring goals at all, making sure that they don't score has got to be your job 101, really. But the fact that we got ourselves into such a good chance, the positions again, and the final ball never came. And then you look at the amount of times Neto was doing this, in particular, had the ball in a prime position to just cross it over, and he didn't do it. And you had the whole thing, the whole horseshoe nonsense that we had last season as well, coming back on ourselves and going down the other flank and then coming back again. And yet, in the last minute of the game, he puts a perfect cross into Cunha, who heads it in. You think, well, where's this been all the last 93 minutes? You're on your favourite side, which did surprise me, to be honest. And we kind of mentioned it on Friday as well, that will he play Neto on the left after how ineffective he was bar his cross for Sasha at Everton? And he did. And Neto, in particular, looked much better on the left. That just meant on the right, there was no one there.
Yes. I mean, to be fair, let's talk forwards because... you've mentioned half of them, to be honest, Stu, and I think they all deserve a bit of a talking point. I mean, call me shocked that Neto played better in his better position on the left wing. that's a standout. And you mentioned about Silva and Cunha, who scored, dropped their average player position graphic for the match. For those who are watching on YouTube, big shout out, make sure you like and subscribe, of course. And for those who are listening on podcast, just head over to Who Scored or go onto YouTube and do the repeated instruction. Anyway, for graphic, as you can sort of see, Neto's arguably our furthest forward player. He's playing left wing, very natural position, but you have very much got Cunha playing ahead of Silva. And I don't know if it's an eye test sort of thing or what, but it almost doesn't feel like that's the right way round for those players. And I know that Silva played a bit deeper for PSV last season, for example, but something just doesn't quite sit right with it, does it, Andy?
No, absolutely not. I mean, if you look at that graphic, there's two things that immediately sprung out to me on that graphic. Sarabia is on Tomato's toes there. So there's just nothing really going forward on the right-hand side. And if you look at where Silva's average position is, he's pretty much taking up the position that Ryan Aitnori can be taken. And I don't want and he should be a striker, not a forward. He should be the one dragging us up the pitch. I don't want him getting in the way of our left-back. That just seems absurd to me. It doesn't make any sense at all how they've sort of come to that. But that's just a massive gap on the right-hand side there. there was just nothing coming down that side of things. It was either going to come down the left or not at all. And in the end, I think both of our goals, these come from left-hand positions, didn't they? So I think that does go to show. But yeah, Sarabia, sorry to move on slightly, but Sarabia, he's not a right winger. I don't think he's really a left winger either. If he's going to be playing, he needs to be more central. And if you're going to have him central, you then can't have Cunha and Silva on the pitch as well with him.
I think you're playing three players who are very similar to each other, in Cunha, Sarabia and Fabio. Not in terms of player, but in the position that they take up or they prefer to take up. And we saw at Old Trafford how Cunha was driving from deep. And that's in that game alone is where he's got his dribbling stats up from, because he was superb in doing that. And yet we were on the back foot a lot of the time. So naturally you are going to be deeper. But if that's his game, just play him in midfield. He doesn't seem to be able to score with his feet. And his header was superb, to be fair to him.
Yeah.
But he seems like his feet fall off when he gets a chance to shoot. And I just, obviously new signings is going to solve that. But again, like Sarabia, I mean, it's kind of a bit of a running joke. And the fact that they're putting front and centre on the lineup graphic was a bit of a little chuckle at Dan's expense. but again, he never got the ball to him. And when the ball was constantly going to Neto anyway, and when he did go over to him, he's not going to beat anyone for pace, obviously, because he's of his age, the kind of player he is. So you either switch it quickly, which never happened, or when that did happen, it was Semedo who was the target. It just seemed baffling why you'd have three players who want to drop into that same space.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like it works. I know Gary O'Neill said as much thing after the Everton win. I don't think it was after Blackpool, sort of saying, you know, I'm still trying to, you know, follow what I want them to do. But then when you look at graphics like that, and it just looks awkward, and you can kind of clearly sort of see where the problem is. And I'm not saying, oh, we need to go back to having Adama Traore, but it feels like we have got three players who they're kind of just pushing into a team at the moment. And again, I think one of the, I guess, the downsides of the formation that we're playing and shoehorning one of those forward players in is I do think we lose a little bit of something in midfield. And I think that Gomez and Lamina played all right, but I feel like we do need we need the runner coming from there rather than that fourth man up front in a way, because they all just kind of don't quite operate in the right fashion. I don't know, maybe 4-2-3-1's the way to go, but actually we need Sasa Kalajdzic up front, because let's be honest, he's not going to be occupying the space that Silva is on a heat map, is he? No. I hope not.
He's kind of what we need. We need a striker who's actually does their actual proper job and doesn't piss about and doesn't almost play on the halfway line for no reason at all. And I mean, you saw there, I mean, put that thing back up again, and you look where Lamina is as well. Look where Lamina is in relation to Fabio, how close they are together. That shouldn't be happening. And I thought Lamina had probably his best game in Wolfshit in that first half. I thought he was immense. But again, we've got someone in João Gomez who we all saw how he can run with the ball as well. But he doesn't do it, does he? He's like we've turned him into the whole pit bull thing. And it's almost like he's not allowed to actually play. He's like, he's there for his tough tackling and that is all. It all seems a bit bizarre.
He did one little nice run in the first half, and then he had a shot, which I think he arguably shouldn't have. But it's going to be interesting, I think, to see how things kind of change over the, over the next couple of weeks, to be honest. And I know we say this a lot, and it's a question I was going to sort of probably try and bring up to you guys later, but, you know, Gary O'Neill's got a decent amount of stock at the moment. He's got a decent amount of leeway in terms of the job he has been given. And I think under the circumstances, he's probably done about as well as you'd expect. Maybe we should have had one or two more points on the board. But he needs this opportunity now. He needs these 2 weeks, because I think, as you noted earlier, Stu, our next kind of run of 5 or 6 games, it gets tricky after the next sort of 2 or 3, doesn't it? So we need to do something quite quickly. On to the game. First half in particular, it had a really heated element to it. And we were a couple of silly and or bizarre bookings for both of our fullbacks. I genuinely don't quite understand either one. I know we had a comment on YouTube, on Twitter, sorry, from Matt Wolf, saying our soft bookings really affecting us as games go on. And I do agree with that, because it can be sloppy, but some of the inconsistencies yesterday were frustrating.
Very much so. I mean, that Semedo one, I mean, it was just a tangle of legs. There was no malice in it. It wasn't really stopping them breaking or anything that dangerous. I've no idea why he booked him for that. The Aitnuri one, I think he probably should have been booked, but I also think AU should have been, because he was very much the instigator in the handbags, because let's call it what it was. That's what it was.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think either of them deserved a red card, nor did either of them deserve no cautioning. But what AU was doing was, like, far worse in terms of, you know, of really pushing the situation. And I don't know, I think, you know, you had Anderson had a handball where he basically slapped the ball from not getting past him. I said, yeah, no, book him. Like, okay, fair enough. And that was just after the 8-0 we won. And then Palace had a VAR check for a penalty, which was one of the most clearly obvious dives I've seen in a long time on Eze.
He was going to ground before Gomez was, and he was going to ground before Gomez was near him, let alone the minute contact that there may have been. I'm not even convinced there was any contact at all, to be honest.
I mean, he took until that last view, though, didn't he? I mean, from the one angle, it looked like he had stood on his foot, but he took that one angle where you could clearly see where his foot landed, and it was nowhere near him. And I thought, well, this is against us. This is obviously going to be a penalty. But again, it's another flaw of the system where you can't go back and book someone for diving.
Well, he should have booked like him anyway. But he should have booked him because he knew it wasn't a penalty and he's gone down very easily. So is that not a booking anymore? They're supposed to be cracking down on people cheating and giving back talk and what have you. But it, like I say, it's so inconsistent the way that they've been approaching it. I think the way that the refs are taking the hard line, it's going to come back to bite them on the arse, because it's only going to take one or two where they don't do it. And you can say, well, you booked him because he took, you know, 20 seconds to take a throw in. He's taken 30 seconds. Where's the booking there? And it's that inconsistency that's going to creep back in like it does every single time there's a new edict. And then it's going to be in the papers and we'll be back to square one. They need to have a hard line and stick to it, and they just never do. And that's why there's no respect for the officials, because they haven't earned it.
There was one last week where someone got booked, I think it was either last week or the week before, where someone got booked at Arsenal for delaying a goal kick. But then when you actually looked at it, and there was an Arsenal player in their penalty area. So, but nothing happened. Nothing, because it can't be retrospectively changed for yellow cards, which is... I know why, because it just opens up a can of chaos, but the whole thing is it's already stopped, because we had a few occasions yesterday where they were taking a bit longer than normal for throw-ins. Yet last week and the week before, people were being booked straight away for that. Well, so it's gone now already, has it? It's lasted 3 weeks.
Yeah. It's the Lamina Southampton red card, isn't it? It's already irrelevant. Yeah.
I don't know. I think I understand why they're trying to take a hard line on it. I actually agree to a degree, because it's one of my biggest frustrations, the whole sort of chatting back to the refs type thing. But I think it doesn't quite marry up with the severeness of the yellow card, because you don't just get a yellow card for any minor foul. It's quite easy to get them. And if you're making it even easier to get them, then it makes the punishment actually come along a hell of a lot quicker, and you've almost got to tread on toes a lot more. You know, like, I was sort of thinking, even compared to rugby, and it's a dance, like, harder to get a yellow card. but the punishment is more severe in terms of going to a sin bin. And I'm not saying, oh, Wolves, you know, the Premier League or whoever should introduce this a sin bin because it's easier to get yellow cards now or whatever. But it's like that, that Eze one, you know, they looked at it and they've kind of gone, oh, it's not a penalty. He's dived. It's like, oh, ref says, okay, fair enough. Let's play on. No penalty. It's like, no, it's not that the decision isn't that it's a no penalty. The decision should be he dived. And if they've taken the time to look at the decision, they can take the time to actually assess that situation, in my opinion. I'm not saying, you know, do it for all decisions, but actually if they've looked at it enough, it's like going, oh, yeah, no, he hasn't, you know, oh, yeah, it's not a penalty. Anything else about it? No. But incidentally, in that box, there was another bizarre moment with Jose Sarr, who had his his moment of the day. is playing it out from the back something that suits all Wolves players?
It doesn't suit half the league. I don't. I mean, I had this comment earlier, didn't I, in the group chat, that I get it. I get the idea behind it. But just because Man City do something doesn't mean everyone has to copy them. But every time this happens, every time you want to play this way, you're asking for trouble. And it happens. It's happened to Edison. It's happened to Alisson. We've seen them concede goals from this pissing about nonsense that happens all the time. And the rewards from it don't happen for us anyway. You watch it in 2 weeks' time. Watch what actually happens. We'll pass it around. It'll come back. It'll go wide, and then I'll boot it down the line. So you've effectively wasted, 40 seconds of passing between each other, and then you've booted it long anyway. And that happens not just for Wolves. It happens for the vast majority of teams in the league because they're not good enough. They haven't got the players who actually have got the footballing brains to run into space and manipulate the ball properly, like teams like Liverpool and Man City and Arsenal as well, to be fair, to most of the time. But every time you play in this way, you are asking for trouble, and it will bite you in the arse. And with Wolves, it happens every week, at least once. But it's not just us. Everyone does it. But we just don't have we don't gain from it. So I personally would just sack it off because it doesn't work. And this is not a Yadar thing, because I do appreciate what they're trying to do. But we can't do it, because it's not just Sarr can't pass the ball to people, because that one was a complete cock-up. He wasn't looking who was behind whoever he passed it to. But again, you look at it from his point of view, you're being told you've got to play it from the back, yeah, which is fine. If you then go along and you get bollocked for it, then that's on you. But if you try and implement what you're being told to do, and no fuckers coming running for the ball or giving you an option, what are you supposed to do? It didn't happen again. It didn't happen again for the rest of the game, did it? And Bentley did exactly the same thing against Blackpool, and we nearly got caught there as well. So it's not just Sarr, it's the club playing this silly way. It just puts them under unnecessary pressure.
I think it's the way to play football at the tippy top of the game. But we're nowhere near that, are we? Yeah. I mean, if you look at the likes of, like you say, your Man City's, your Arsenal's, pretty much every player in their defence could quite easily be converted into a midfielder because they're so composed on the ball. We've got Craig Dawson and Max Kilman. Like, these things are not the same. I don't say they're cloggers, because that's doing them a disservice, but they're not that level where they can just pick out a pass or dink it over a player and create space. We're never going to do that, not with the players we've got. And I would love to see us be able to do it effectively and beat the press, but we just haven't got the players to do it. And then, as you say, it just ends up working itself wide. And then you just lump it forward, and then it's a 50-50 on whether or not you're going to win that. So we're kind of damned if we do, damned if we don't, I think, ultimately, with it all.
Something that occurred to me is, I'm not saying that there's a new tactic for it, but these guys get paid an awful lot of money and, frankly, have a decent amount of time to train on these things. And I'm not saying, like, oh, you'll... Because a lot of it's systems and pattern related, in terms of, oh, right, when we get it, right hand side, so-and-so, you know, Dawson goes here, Smeda goes here, the ball goes out to him, and we all kind of shuffle around. And I know there's external variables with the opposition players and stuff like that, but there's only a finite amount of space. So, mate, you know, am I being silly by sort of saying, well, you know, go through, you know, try and play it short, get it back to Dawson, get back to Saar, who's hopefully got a bit more space or whatever. I don't know. I feel like I'm rambling on trying to create a new method to take goal kicks here, is where I'm going with it. But
Brighton's defenders were taking short goal kicks to their keeper against us. And that's a complete different level of chaos and madness but none of our players went and closed it down, did they? They were still doing it on near a full time. The whole game, no one closed them down to stop them doing it. And they were tipping and tapping around the edge of their own 6-yard box with a keeper receiving goal kicks. This is the kind of levels you're talking about. But again, you probably are right, Rich. They've been coached to do that by De Zerbi. They didn't do that under Potter, not to that extent. But again, do you want to spend all your time coaching goal kicks when you've got other we've got bigger problems to look at?
Yeah,
I think, and I think with them though as well, it's almost like a speed of thought thing, where they can clearly pass the ball to each other because they do it all week long for 2-3 hours a day, but it's that speed of thought, the turn of pace, that's what's lacking because we just haven't got the players to do it.
Yeah. Should we talk goals, guys?
Yeah, if we must.
Let's skip the Palace ones. I don't want to. No, we sort of need to. And I think, I guess instead of kind of going through them individually, I feel like we probably should talk player perspective. And it comes down to a defence, let's be honest, guys. And I think the two players who have kind of caught the most slack for the goals have been Nelson Semedo and Max Kilman. I mean, it feels like now that Matt Doherty's back, if Nelson Semedo does anything wrong, and I mean anything, there are now calls for Matt Doherty to come back in. And I'm not necessarily saying he shouldn't come back in, but I do feel like it's slight harsh. Saying that, I think he could have done a lot better with the majority of the goals.
I mean, the first one yesterday, you look at where he's standing for when the ball's played to him. Oh, no problem with that. He probably should have got as soon as the ball gets to, before it's crossed over, he should get there quicker. But again, like we said last week, or 2 weeks ago, you have to look at the quality of the finishing sometimes. We would never in a million years score that first goal. Never. Because the ball was perfect and the striker instinct to get in that situation in the first place, let alone finish it like he did. Yeah. We wouldn't do that. That never happened for Wolves. It was a great goal from their point of view. You're looking at a ball delivered like that. Neto put the one in, like we mentioned earlier, at the very end. Very different type of cross. But whipped in to feet at speed with a bit of swerve on. We don't do that.
I mean, it was a well-worked goal, but also, like, it was kind of easy for them. The big man held it up, laid it off. There was only one pass available, which was to the man that Semedo was 20 fucking yards away. Like, and then, as you say, he never got over anywhere near quick enough to try and even stop the cross. He had a very easy job on putting that ball into the box. You know, he had a fucking day and a half to pick out a pass. And then it was Edouard, wasn't it, who scored the first goal. Like, he just beats Kilman quite easily. Kilman shouldn't be letting him get across him. Shouldn't be letting him get goal side of him there. That's fucking rookie mistakes. But I feel like all of our defence currently, they just feel like proper 50-50 players. And I mean, like, everything they do, you're never 100% sure that they're actually going to win it. If the ball comes into the box for a header, they might win it, they might not. Like, I don't feel confident at all. I feel like they win 50% of the headers. They win 50% of the tackles. But that's just too big a gap to allow people into. So you're always playing on the toss of a coin, whether or not we're going to actually concede a goal. And those three goals, I think all three of them were avoidable, to be perfectly honest. I mean, it all came down to a stupid error here, a stupid error there that probably should have been dealt with a lot better than it was.
I mean, the third one, he sat Kilman on his arse.
Yeah.
But there were plenty of players before he got to Edouard for that who should have been cutting it out. So again, it was everybody losing their 50-50.
And I mean, watching the third goal back as well, yeah, he sits on his arse. But it's also a very good finish as well. And I think that's the thing that
we don't do either.
Yeah, that's what I find so frustrating. It's like the amount of times we watch Wolves concede, you go, I can't imagine scoring a goal like that. And there's something about that third goal where, you know, he basically has the freedom of the penalty box to kind of come inside, do a dummy, and then cut it back into the bottom corner. And I can't go, which of our players scores that goal? Genuinely, like, which of our forwards? Neto, if he's prime Neto from the opposite flank, maybe. But that we're talking a Neto who hasn't done that for
two years
at minimum. And yeah, that's worrying. I mean, it just goes to show that we just don't see Wolves score very often. Well, no, we do. We just see them score headers. Because I tell you what, it's going to be understated, but Hwang's header was a fucking work of art.
Even though it came off his shoulder, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't count. We score goals off shoulders. Stassa did it against Everton. But it's a lovely old job. Proper good set-piece goal. I know that's something that people are using against Wolves at the moment, but we score goals from set-pieces. But,
We wouldn't have any.
In
fairness, though, I mean, we've gone years without scoring from set pieces. Like, we'd never really look that dangerous when we get a corner or anything. So it's nice to have that, even if that's pretty much all we've got at the moment. But at least it's something. It's something you can actually build on, isn't it? So, you know, I don't know. Yeah. I think that's a weird stick to beat people with. You're only scoring off something, but at least we're scoring, which is more than what we've said for the last 2 years.
it does feel like... I mean, yeah, pick on Wolves for not scoring many goals. Take it as well. I mean, I can't remember if it was in the same... Was it an Athletic article? I'm slightly paraphrasing. In terms of Wolves score a lot of consolation goals and goals from set pieces. It's like, well, don't really score any, to be honest. I think drilling down into the goals that we do score when they are effectively meaningless doesn't have as much weight as working out why we don't score any at all. if we're winning games and they all seem to be from set pieces, then yeah, I could arguably see it. But yeah, me having an old man gripe about Wolves not scoring many goals, I guess. But no, I found it enjoyable. Again, Palace's second goal. It's like what you said, Andy. It was a battle of 50-50s and just poor communication and people running from midfield from Palace's point of view, and Eze bursting past Lamina effectively. And I always try and look at goals when we concede. How would Palace achieve that goal? And you know, Roy Hodgson would love that goal because it's a proper training ground patterned goal. In terms of getting your striker to create a big lump of space, getting the ball in behind, having your star midfielder run on to finish it. But classic Hodgson.
Yeah, and it ain't every day where you get an assist from your back either, is it? So, which again, you're just rubbing salt into the wound. But fact remains, yet again, we ain't got anyone who does that kind of thing. None of our players would run from deep and finish like that. Just won't.
No, that's a good point. I mean, you look at our midfield too. That if that graphic that you put up earlier, the average positions, aren't they both on the halfway line?
Yeah.
They're never going to be looking forward. They're always going to be looking over their shoulder. and Sarabia's not going to be breaking into the box because he's slower than I am. And Neto was getting chalk on his boots. So, yeah, that goal's never going to come from a Wolves perspective, is it?
Yeah, we did have a good comment on YouTube early when we were talking about the midfield, actually, from Fancastian Josh Lem. Who says, it feels like our midfielders are all or nothing. Lamina or Gomez can be basically extra defenders. And it sort of feels, I completely agree with that. But I think sometimes they can just be extra forward players as well. But, like, I don't think they need to split for responsibilities, but we do need someone who can just plug that defence because it's not super strong yet. And be that third centre-half, be that third defender. And of course, he sort of says Bellegarde needs to be the link, and I sort of think he will be in terms of being that runner. I'll say I don't know if this is somewhat quite breaking news, but I believe that Podence has might have secured a move to Olympiakos.
Okay, well. Going back to where he came from.
Just like you want to, Andy.
I don't mind Podence, and I think we would have been better with him yesterday than without him. But I also understand why people do hate his guts as well, because he's a very frustrating player. But at least he has a shot. And like the odd time when my mate watched the match, she's like, at least he knows where the goal is. That's what she always says about him. At least he knows where the goal is. And that's something that can't be said for, you know, 10 out of the 11 players on the pitch.
But I think it also, when I was kind of harsh on him on Friday, but it is.
You've been drinking. Glare,
well, no, I just don't like him. I think it says it all that he's ended up back in Greece. And he's not this superstar that everyone seems to think he is. Just because he scored in a team that was absolutely woefully shit doesn't mean he's any good. He was just better than the others. Hopefully now we have got people in who can do that job. And when Sasha is fully fit and if Fabio's used properly, maybe we won't need to even talk about Podence anymore. But thankfully, it's all over now. So that's the main thing.
But you can't tell me that Podence is worse than fucking Sarabia. I'm sorry, but I'm not seeing this at all. They both try and do very similar things on doing their flicks and trying to create space and what have you. But at least Podence was successful with it. Sarabia just sort of stands around, and if it doesn't come off or it doesn't come close enough to him, he won't make the run, he won't make the move. I'm sorry, but I definitely would have kept him over Sarabia. I think that's just a weird fucking move, to be perfectly honest, for us to be pinning our hopes on Sarabia over someone like Podence. I'd rather take a Podence who's usually somewhere between a 6 and an 8 than a Sarabia who's usually about 4, unless we're playing League One opposition and then our fans start wanking off over him because he gets 3 assists against fucking Blackpool, for crying out loud.
But again, look where he played against Blackpool. We haven't seen that in the Premier League. He hasn't played in the middle properly.
Because he's got no fucking strength. He cannot play in the middle though, can he? He needs to. We don't know. That's the only position that he can do for us. But he's just a fucking pussy. Like, never gets stuck in. It's so infuriating. I can absolutely see why Dan hates his guts, because he's the most annoying player in the team at the moment.
Is why I think the 4-2-3-1 thing that was mentioned earlier, with Bellegarde as well, we've actually got players to play 4-2-3-1 now properly. And one of him, Sarabia, Cunha, maybe even Fabio were there just to do something. Just to do something that's not nothing. At least because you can pull the strings there. You don't have to run around, especially if you've got two midfielders behind you anyway, and you've got options up front. Maybe that is the way to go. But I don't know. I don't like him playing out wide either. And we saw why, because he was bought as some kind of number 10 hybrid, and he's barely played there. And if he has, he's played with Cunha, who is the same player, and they occupy the same space. It doesn't make any sense. So, and until we've actually seen any of them on their own with actual other players around them, I think we can really judge. Because Cunha, other than his goal, I didn't think he was that great yesterday again either.
No, Cunha, when Cunha's played with Silva, I don't think either of them have particularly worked. Because they try to, as you said earlier, Stu, they try to occupy the same positions. And it just does not work when you've got those two, because they both want it deep and to take it forward. And Cunha's the better of the two at that, which is why Silva's getting crowded out. But Cunha doesn't then have a striker with him in order to play off. So that's why that's not working, I think. For me, it needs to be Kolasinac and one or the other, preferably Cunha at the moment, I think.
Yeah, I agree. We do need a beanpole up front, in my opinion, just to, you say, to be that centre point. And kind of go, guys, I will stand on the edge of the box for you. I will stand the furthest forward on the defender. Just play it to my feet and I'll play it back to you until we get high off the pitch and swing it in the box for me.
It seems so simple, doesn't it? But I mean, that is what we're missing, isn't it? Spot on, Rich.
You know what kind of manager would do that as well?
Fuck off.
A king. A king would do that, if you ask me. No, and you know what? It's really interesting because I was listening to a rugby podcast earlier, ahead of a Rugby World Cup. Sorry for switching codes for a minute, but they're sort of saying about New Zealand a lot of the time that they don't always have an intricate way of playing. It's that they pass to space, and you know they do the simple things really well. It's not about having multiple diverted runners and things like that. And I sort of think that sometimes we do overcomplicate it sometimes, and my only sticking point, bearing in mind we've just had a transfer window and we've pulled off some signings, hopefully some really good ones, is if you don't play Sarabia right wing, who do you play there? Who is naturally the best fit to be there? And I'm not saying I think it should be Sarabia, but it does feel a bit of a misstep in this team at the moment, balance-wise, because I think everyone's kind of in agreement Neto's a better left winger than he is a right winger. And I think he had a really solid game yesterday, say, being an actual left winger, just keeping the width. But what you need on the other side, if you've got one player keeping the width, you sort of need that right winger. And I thought this would be Sarabia's role in the team for me, is he'd be an inside forward and he'd be someone who just leech off that back post for whether it's Bueno whipping in balls or whoever, that he just scoops up anything at the far post, and he's got the technical attributes and the goal scoring ability, as you sort of showed a couple of seasons ago, to just poach those goals, because we've got the ability on that one side and we don't on the other. Or he just operates a little bit more centrally to give your right back or right wing back a bit more space. And I don't know, I'm really impressed with how they've made, what they did to pull the team together in transfer-wise. But that right wing spot, I think, is still an issue until kind of proven otherwise. Everywhere else, you can see the balance, you can see the fit, you can see the chemistry. I don't know who you play. If either of you can tell me, if it's an 18-year-old Paraguayan, then I'm going to be a bit sceptical until one of us sees him play.
I think, in a weird way, I think Sarabia would probably benefit from playing with Doherty in a weird way. Because,
I'd get that.
Because you've got someone there with freakish pace who doesn't look like he's got pace at all, even at his age, other than just playing Doherty right wing, which is probably going to happen soon. I mean, it wouldn't rule that out. But someone who will actually go in the wing and cross the ball over and get himself further upfield. Semedo doesn't do that. He's never done that. That's not his game. So,
he can't cross for shit, can he? So it's a bit pointless.
Yeah. And in that point, when Sarabia's got the ball, he's got no one to play 1-2s with because there's no one else up there with him. If you've got a fullback overlapping like Doherty does, maybe then you bring the best out of him and then he can cut in deeper, in more centrally and get a shot off that way. But it's just a system of, it's systematic of this whole farce of a team. You've got players who we really shouldn't be relying on to bring in to make others better. because they can't do it on their own.
Mm.
And maybe having Enzo as, if he turns out like we hope, giving him complete full reign of that half of the pitch and Semedo just doesn't cross the halfway line, maybe that works. Who knows? He's got the skill to do that, which is fair enough, if he has. But like you said, Rich, we just don't know yet.
Part of me wonders for that right wing spot, why not Hwanga? Why not get him there playing the inside forward role? I know he's predominantly right footed and you want a left, ideally. But I do think he's probably the best option and he's kind of proven to be our best goal threat so far this season. So of the players we know about, he's probably the one I would want there. Enzo, we don't know. We've only seen YouTube clips. He looks a bit smash mouth, which might work.
What, dead?
Yeah. So, you know, that might work. But also, I wonder about Bellegarde, whether or not he's going to be taking that sort of Mateus Nunez role, the one where it's sort of on the right, but not quite that area of the pitch. I wonder if maybe that's what he's been bought in for, if they're going to do the midfield box, you know, the 4-2-2-2, you know, whatever the trendy one is at the moment. I wonder if that's going to be his role going forward. And there's still a lot of questions on how the newbies are going to fit into the team, you know, other than the centre-half. Obviously, we know what that's all about. So, yeah, it's a question mark, but I think there's quite a few options there that could be used.
Yeah, I agree. And I was going to say, I think the next 2 weeks are going to be pretty vital, because the other thing is, sort of headlined the show by saying we weren't completely awful. And, you know, the stats kind of agree, to be honest, in terms of it. But I think Dan described it as dominating without dominating. Andy, if I have to associate one phrase with you, I was going to say something really offensive then. It's all fart and no shit.
That's exactly what that is, isn't it, looking at it?
Yeah, and you know, we've got the possession. The shots are a bit less so, but when you've got more passes, high completion passes, and things like that, you do kind of go, I can see Gary O'Neill is trying to do something with them. Mm-hmm. He's trying to coach them and trying to implement a style on them. But they're still, it screams still work to be done.
Yeah, I mean, when you look, like, we were the away team yesterday, so you don't expect to have the, 57% possession. That's a healthy amount of possession to have. The pass statistics were pretty damn good, to be perfectly honest. And even the shots, like 12 shots away from home, well, that's all right, to be honest. But 4 on target. And one of those did happen to come off our striker's shoulder rather than his head. Yeah, that's a little bit concerning for me.
Yeah. Time will tell. I mean, just to kind of quickly wrap up, if it's again in line with what we sort of says, everyone keeps talking about where we need to root in, where we need to improve. We keep arriving in the box, but we weren't overly threatening again. Very aware, even though we created a few chances. I get it, and you know, I'm saying Eze and Edouard gave us a lot of issues when they turned us over in silly areas, and there's only so long we can just kind of say, yeah, we're just getting punished for these really little mistakes. So what are we doing to stop them? And, you know, maybe Santi Bueno's for guy to do it. And we go back to a 3-4-3, 3-5-2, and kind of, you know, roll it back, as it were. But we're going to take a short break, guys. A few more bits to talk about, including Nunez's goodbye post, which I feel like we're going to want to get our teeth into, guys. So we'll be back in just... This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. We all carry different stresses, big and small. It could be from work, stuff going on at home, or just from supporting a football team you flatter to deceive, and as the bedsheets have always said, let us down. We often bottle up these stresses and try and keep a lid on them, but when you do that, it can start to affect you negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It gives you a place to get these things off your chest, get down to root cause, and figure out how to work through what's weighing you down. Therapy is there to help develop positive coping skills. It's not just for people who have experienced major trauma.
It's about empowering you to be the best version of yourself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not look and give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible and suited to your schedule. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners can get 10% off their first month using the code betterhelp.com/wanderers. That's betterhelp.com/wanderers. Let's get back to the show. A quick second. Hello, welcome back, everybody. As I kind of mentioned, we'll do a fun one. So, of course, Mateus Nunes left Wolves at the end of last week, and it took him a few days, and I think this upset quite a lot of people. I'll be honest, I couldn't give a shit how long it took him to put out his obligatory social media post. Guys, have you both seen what Mateus had to say?
Yeah.
For those who haven't, I won't read it. Sod it. We've got time. I'll read out fully. The time has come to say goodbye to the club that allowed me to play the best league in the world, and to the club whom I always have deep admiration and respect for, the club you decide to go on strike from training for 5 days. Thanks to Wolves, the staff and my teammates, and especially the extraordinary fans for their unwavering support, unwavering and heartwarming enthusiasm and support. He's not been around Wolves too long. I really appreciate the meaning of the word commitment. I'm struggling, guys, here. I'm not going to lie. Because I don't want to kind of break down every point like it's my dad wrote a porno. But fuck me. this is... where was I? And that was always present in my daily attitudes over a year. And that will remain in my memory forever. I could have a lot to say about the real reason for my departure and how it happened. But I will only say that fans deserve all my respect, affection and deep admiration. Everything happens for a reason, however incomprehensible it may seem at first sight. But in the future, I am sure we'll clarify, and probably at that time, everyone without exception will understand the reason for this last troubled week. Thank you, Wolves fans. I'll never forget you. I mean, I've wrote some bullshit in my time before, both on the fan cast and otherwise. That's the biggest load of shite I've read in a while, though. And I read an interest, and I read a blog earlier that really.
He knows exactly what he's doing. I mean, the thing about the real reason and trying to stoke the fires, and because everyone knows how paranoid we are. And that we'll lap this stuff up. Well, it didn't work, did it? Because not one single person bought into this at all that I saw. Everyone was pretty unanimous, just telling to fuck off again. It just doesn't wash, did it? I mean, it was obvious what he did. He went on strike to get away because his head had been turned. Fine. Why didn't you just own it? Rather than come out with some PR-led bollocks like that one believes.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the thing that annoys me, it's like, yeah, time will give me the space to showcase why I did what I did, or better still, just tell us. Because even if you went, I've got deep respect for the club, I felt I had to, you know, force the situation. This is a dream move for me, and one I think, you know, genuinely couldn't turn down. You know, even if he came out with some, you know, drivel like, you won't understand because you're not a professional footballer or whatever, or I'm from, you know, wherever, I've had this background, I cannot do this. I have this level of expectation of what I want to do in my career, and this is an opportunity too hard to pass up. And I felt this was the only way to be able to get to make this. I'd have a level of respect for him. And that's his reasoning, as you said. That's why he went on strike. Just say it. And, you know, he could say, I'm sorry for the impression and potential disrespect that you may have felt, you know, the I'm sorry you were offended line.
Mm.
I'd get over that bullshit, but sort of the whole, you know, everyone without exception, we'll just know. You'll just know as I sit on the bench at Man City for 33 games this season. And yeah, that was a lovely note to leave a player leave on, if you ask me.
It was. I mean, he was always going to get his transfer. And even when we rebuffed the first one, by all accounts, the clubs were still talking. It wasn't a case of no, and we're not welcoming any more beats. It was a case of that's not enough, but let's keep talking and we'll come to an agreement. He was always going to get what he wanted at the end of the day on this one. And yeah, if he came and said, look, my head's not in the right place, I'm not going on strike, but I'd like to just be taken out of the firing line for a few days to just get my... I'd sort of respect that a little bit, rather than literally downing tools, throwing your toys out of the pram, and then coming out with some airy-fairy bullshit in your statement. The whole, well, stuff's going on, but, you know, we can't talk about it, but just know that I didn't do it because I hate your guts. I didn't do it because I'm a selfish. But that's exactly what it was. It was all me, and that was all it was ever going to be. And now the fans are just going to give him abuse. But I've seen quite a bit on Twitter from Man City fans, and pundits from Man City are all like, shouldn't have done that. Don't like that he's done that. It's made us look bad. Because it does reflect badly on City that they've come in, they've unsettled a player because they're mega books and they can do that to anybody. So that's going to put a lot of other people's backs up immediately. So I can understand why City fans don't like that. And I think that's a massive reason why he's done it, is to appease the bald fraud up north.
Yeah, I mean, Man City have had the no dickhead policy basically since Balotelli, and have worked really hard in terms of the PR of their signings to make sure that they're not signing bad apples, that they're not just going out of their way to, you know, they, let's say 5 years ago, they weren't trying to sign Icardi. You know, they were staying well, they have stayed well away from any signings who could cause them an inch of controversy since having the likes of Tevez, since the likes of having Balotelli. Now, I think how Man City went about their business with Wolves reflects badly on them, because again, they've usually been quite coy in terms of, you know, how they necessarily went after Jack Grealish, that they essentially ascertained how much his get out fee was in terms of his release clause if a Champions League came looking after him. It seemed to be fairly amicable from what I understand about Calvin Phillips as well. This just seemed to be, we've laid down a marker and it's near enough to a valuation for you to make the player think that we're being serious, but nowhere near enough to make you accept, and that will turn ahead. And I think that, so it's not, for me, not reflected well on them. But we got to move past it, haven't we, in a way? Because, yeah, I just can't wait until... Is it 20th of September, Stu?
30th.
Because Santi Bueno is going to be in the team at that point. honestly, I've not watched him play, but he looks like my sort of player.
I don't know what it is, but I've already nicknamed him the Butcher of Uruguay because he looks like that's going to be his nickname.
Like he's going to get a red card. I don't know when it's going to happen. It's going to be glorious. But we could have, like, you know, this, him and João Gomez and Lamina. In theory, is a frankly terrifying prospect in terms of kind of coming up against in a pitch side brawl, in my opinion, and I'm all for it.
He's going to have a Jody Craddock moment as well, where we're going to see him with the headband on, covered in blood, somebody else's blood as well.
He will bleed for this team.
He's already a hero when he hasn't even kicked a ball.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I feel like we're talking about so much, and I'm always like this when it comes to new signings, but. Yeah, him, I think he could be something, because I don't know. I don't know whether he's the heir apparent to Dawson or what, but I don't know. I think because we haven't really talked about Max Kilman. in the first part of the show. And I think I kind of want to just round up August, and I think he's one of the big talking points of it, because I think there's a lot of questioning of him now, that more so now that he's captain, and the fact that he is a quiet captain is something to be derising of. What are your sort of thoughts of, you know, well, five games, including a League Cup game, as Max Kilman as captain? Because I have opinions, but I realise I ramble on and give my opinion first without asking you guys, so I'm going to gauge my opinion on what you two both say.
I've got no real problem with it. I mean, you have... not everyone can have a Paulins or a kind of Cody, can they? There's not many people who are like that, and you, regardless. I mean, Saar's a bit mad, but having goalkeepers as captains is weird anyway. I don't particularly like that. Harry Kane is captain for England. He doesn't really speak that much. He's not that kind of vocal captain, is he? Shouldn't matter, should he? That's the point. It shouldn't matter. But the fact that... I think if you sum up August, I wouldn't be remotely bothered if we had Santi Bueno and Toti Gomez starting against Liverpool in 2 weeks' time, because neither of them have covered themselves in any kind of glory whatsoever.
I feel like Kilman, because I don't think Dawson's played particularly well so far this season. He's looked like the player that I was a little bit worried about him becoming with his age. Like, his positioning's been a bit iffy. He's not winning the headers that he was. I don't know. But I feel like Kilman's trying to do absolutely everything for everybody. I think I said yesterday, like, he's supermanning it because he's trying to cover everybody. And at that point, he's just making himself look awful because he's got no positional awareness by doing that. As far as him as captain, the captain's armband's nothing but really a tokenistic gesture, is it? Like, you can be a leader of the team, you can be an organiser of defence without wearing the captain's armband. I don't think that's a prerequisite for anything other than you're the face of this club. It's a bit like Neves. I don't think Neves was a great captain, realistically, but he was the face of Wolverhampton Wanderers for the Fosun era, pretty much. And Kilman feels like he's just the next one of that. You know, he's a young, you know, part British, because got a bit of everything in, hasn't he? So he just sort of fits the mould on what Wolves are going to be now under Gary O'Neill, potentially. So I think it's nothing more than a tokenistic gesture to give him a captain's armband, personally.
Yeah, I'm so glad you both agreed with how I was going to say it. But, you know, my thing about, I don't quite understand this whole, he's a quiet captain, which, you know, all right, this is a high, this is a stretch, and I appreciate it, and I'm certainly not going to clip it. There's a certain fairly quiet captain who lifted the World Cup for England. Like, you know, with respect, the greatest captain for England was not a big shouty leader of men. He was an exemplary captain, though, and he led with authority, and I think that's it. And I don't know, maybe how he Kilman comes off, he doesn't exude authority in the same way I guess other people do, but I think with issues situations like this, I don't think it's not an issue if you're winning or when you're playing well. It wasn't an issue against Man United when you put in a great display. More than an issue then. It wouldn't have been an issue on Tuesday night when we beat Blackpool, but it's an issue now. But I sort of think if you're not... about a YouTube comic come in who has basically just stolen... I say stolen my point, has come to the same conclusion as me. You know, you don't need to be a shouter, but you do need to set the tone. And I think if you're not that organised, if you're not that vocal leader, if your kind of leadership style is to set the standard, then you kind of need to set the standard. And I don't think he's necessarily been doing that, but I don't think he's necessarily had the assistance to do that. And I think whether we go back to a back four to give vote, because I think it would help Dawson out as well, potentially as well. Whether that gives him that bit of a platform, I don't know. But yeah, we will see in terms of that. Before we go on to our question from Twitter Corner. It bears mentioning. I don't want to delve too deeply in it, guys. But unfortunately, Wolves did tweet after the game that we're very disappointed to report that one of our players was the target of discriminatory abuse by an opposing fan during today's game with Palace. They did mention that they've been in contact with the police and have given witness statements and stuff like that. And I just kind of want to mention it. If they aim thoughts of a fan cast, that most people don't deserve to watch football. And, you know, I don't know what thing was said, but if you feel that you need to do that as a Wolves fan and you listen to this show, feel free to kind of, you know, click and follow.
Yeah. And fair play to Palace as well, that they dealt with it really quickly and put a statement out immediately. Yeah. And but that happened that happened 2 years ago with Wang as well. Exactly the same thing. Just again, for a club that's based where it is, you'd think they'd have better, more common sense, wouldn't you? But
you would, always, but let's be honest.
It's always
there's a lot of fucking lot of London clubs who are just full of cunts. So I don't want to say London's full of it, but there certainly is a running theme when it comes to certain clubs in the capital where it's full of shitheads.
That's fair.
Right, let's finish off the show by having a quick question from Twitter Corner. From KingWolf84, has the international break the right time to allow Gary O'Neill to spend 2 weeks on the training ground with the players? Also, don't forget Wednesday night, Wolves women at home at Telford United versus Stourbridge, and they'd love for as many Wolves fans to come as possible. So let's talk for the next couple of weeks. What do we think is going to change?
It can't be the same. That's the only thing you can say. Hopefully, I mean, to be fair, I'm probably being a bit harsh on with him. And the fact that he had 4 or 5 days before the first game of the season. So we saw what happened with the World Cup break, where you had a manager with time with the players together. And we haven't got that many going out for international call-ups, amazingly. So using it as another mini pre-season, it can't be a bad thing, can it, really? And especially, like you said, Rich, earlier about the new signings bedding them in, you can already see that they've got a bit of, like, on Cunha's Insta stories the other day about the little posters that they put all over Joe Gomez's locker. And you can see they've got the lols and the trolls in the dressing room are back, if they were ever gone. You integrate the new guys in there, work on a bit of shape, a bit of shooting maybe, if we can have some kind of miracle like that. If we in 2 weeks' time we come back playing against Liverpool and it's exactly the same, you're going to start getting people asking the serious questions, because this is the right time to work on things now.
I mean, it's the first time that Gary O'Neill's going to have to, like, slow down and catch his breath, isn't it? As you say, he didn't even have a week before the season started. And the matches come thick and fast, so this is the first time that he can actually collect his thoughts. I'm kind of intrigued what kind of icebreakers they'll be getting the players to do to introduce each other, whether or not it'll be a case of you've got to pair up and you've got to tell me about your partner, or if they'll have to build a tower out of newspaper or something like that to get the teamwork going. Some classic office space.
What is your? I was going to say, what is the most notable? We won't go best or worst. Most notable team building exercise you've had to do? Because I've got one, guys. But I will start off. We did a team building session once, and we had to like write down, not like objections we get in like sales and things like that, like on little bits of paper, and we had to put them in balloons, and we had the chairs were set up as a like a square. I was going to say a square, so it was a big hole in the middle. We had to all put them in the middle, and like we carried on throughout the day, and then at the end of the day, we had to like stamp on the balloons and like burst the objections out of the way. But it turned out half the people did not tell the loads of balloons being popped.
That was just this... awful. To
yeah.
Fair.
Yes. So, Andy, you got... yes, due to your question, yes.
Of course, it was.
So, I mean, I've never had anything that bad. It's always just been you're all new here, and you know, you pair off with somebody else. You have to ask each other questions, and then you've got to give five facts to the group about your partner. Oh. And it's pulling teeth because I couldn't give a fuck about what my partner thinks about anything. I'm not there to make friends. I'm there to work. So just leave me alone. But there you go. You have to get stuck in, don't you?
Go on, Stu. You must have had one of these.
I've never had one of these. I've never done one. It's refused.
Just no.
Just no. There's no need. Again, and he said that they're not your friends, and if they are your friends, then you'll see them when you choose to anyway.
See, I don't mind team building exercise when they're used to somewhat help build a team. If it's a mandatory activity to do, then yeah, it is plucking teeth, as you'd say. That's probably a good place to end the show on plucking teeth, to be honest, because it kind of goes full circle on being a Wolves fan. We'll hopefully be back in the next week or so. Hopefully we can sort of bring over an ad hoc pod episode of our choosing. If not, we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time, guys. Make sure you do keep up to date with all things Wolves Fancast. We're putting out loads of content on YouTube with our reaction shows, our preview shows. Thank you genuinely so much for everyone who's tuned in to the shows this season. I think pretty much like all our shows have managed to get like over 1,000 or nearly 1,000 hits. And that's such a big thing for us as a channel, us as a group, that we've kind of like, we're sort of hitting these milestones now. And it can't be done without you guys. So big love, big thanks. And do make sure, if you're not ready, to hit that like and subscribe button. It does help grow what we're trying to do and get the word out there. It's not just for reaction shows. We have got things like Goodies Tactical Analysis as well. We've got my crappy YouTube shorts as well. So there's loads of fantastic Fancast content that you can really get your teeth into. If you haven't found us yet online, here's where you can find it. It's been scrolling across your screen for the last 70 minutes, guys. But if you're unsure, it's at Wolves Fancast, and that's at Twitter. It's at Facebook. It's at Instagram. It's at TikTok. It's on the website for wolvesfancast.com, and it's at YouTube as well. So you get all your places to get your Wolves hits. Until next time, though, it is goodbye from Andy.
See ya.
And it's goodbye from Stu.
Before we go, I will just say, no. Just because Nagel get mad at us. If Wolves women were playing at Molineux on Wednesday, I would have definitely gone. But Telford's a bit of a pain in the arse to get to, so sadly I won't be there. And remember, kids, if you are going to write a blog, don't act like a 12-year-old. Write like an adult. Goodbye, everyone.
See you next time, guys.